What's going on, guys? Welcome to the latest episode of Can I Kick It FC. For the first time in a long, long time, it's your two favorite hosts of your favorite Black History podcast, me and Shanier. We're here to bring to you guys our latest documentary pod, I guess. I guess it's what we're calling these, right?
Yeah, I guess the docu-pod, yeah.
Docu-pod, yeah, man. Yo, it's been a while since we've done these. It's been a while.
I know. It's been a long time.
Right.
The last one was what? France?
May? I think May. That's when we did the Africa team from France.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a while. Season 3, Shanier, how you feel about it?
Oh, feeling good. I'm ready to get back in because it's been a while. I've been able to, you know, dive into some of these players, and it's been a long time.
Yeah. So, guys, I know we haven't announced who we're talking about yet, but before we do, just take a moment, like, share, subscribe to the podcast, share with a friend, and make sure to listen to our previous episodes because now season 3 is officially started. So make sure you catch up on those episodes you haven't listened to yet. But today's episode, we are talking about the guy that, depending on what part of North London you are, they'll call him Judas. Other parts might call him a part of an Invincible. It all depends on what color you're mixing with your whites. Are you mixing it with red or are you mixing it with blue? That sounds very gangish. I don't know why I made that connection. But we're talking about
I mean, around that time, it pretty much was gangish.
Yo, okay. I mean, by the way, we're talking about Sol Campbell, so I just want to talk about this point real quick. Yo, you know, like in like when you were in school and stuff like that, you had to be cognizant of the colors you wore. So I wonder, like in school in England, it's like, hey, look, you can't be rolling up here in your Spurs jersey today. Like, you might get beat up. That'd be that word, Arsenal red day. You know, I don't want to gang too much with it, you know?
Yeah.
But like I said, we're talking about Sol Campbell. And the reason why we decided to profile him is because for those who don't know, like Sol Campbell's is really connected to a lot of stuff in English soccer in the 90s. Like you can't, the way how, you know, okay, let me back up. You know how they do when he talks about the Premier League Hall of Fame? Stuff like that, right? So I think about players that are in the Hall of Fame, like, you cannot explain the story of the Premier League without them. That means they're automatically qualified for the Hall of Fame. So Campbell is one of those players that you can't describe the Premier League without him because he's interconnected in so many parts of the league. So where should we start this journey off at?
The thing that stood out to the most with me, and that you find very common. So, by the way, most of you may realize that it may know that Sol Campbell is a, you know, bona fide legendary. Everybody in England knows center back. What's interesting is, a lot of players that are center backs today or even played center back in their professional careers started out on the other side of the pitch.
Yeah, and that was weird.
it's kind of weird because Sol Campbell started out going to West Ham to begin his career in the youth program as a striker.
Yeah.
Which is very weird.
I can't imagine. I mean, it's a striker, yo. He just doesn't give me strike qualities. He just doesn't. Like you said, he started off in West Ham. But then, like, a very interesting thing about Sol Campbell, and I think it describes a lot about his life and, like, the certain moves that he's made, is, like, his upbringing. So, of course, you know, he's born to Jamaican parents, so that's a win for me. But he expressed himself to football because he's the youngest of 12 kids. And he said, like, a lot of the times, like, the only time his father was to interact with him was to discipline. So he would just stay quiet and independent. And I think, if, like, we're going to talk about it when we talk about his career in football and other parts. But Sol Campbell seems to me like the kind of person that's like, unless you talk to him, he might come across as meek. Like, he's not going to say a whole bunch. But he has a lot of impact on a lot of things that are going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. But he's not, he has a lot of impact about things that are going on, but he's not tied down to one thing. So if he feels wrong about something, instead of him talking about it, he's just going to let it build up and then be like, just wait for a moment where he can be like, all right, I'm going to move on to this thing. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like West Ham, he was at West Ham. If everyone who knows football is like, West Ham is like, I just going to be a weird comparison, but it's like the FC Dallas of England. Like, they might not be a great team. The senior team might not be a great team historically, but you're going to have a lot of great players come through that program or through that culture and then disperse. So he started off there, and then, but he left because the coach made a comment about the West Indies being England and cricket. And so just didn't like the comment. And I try to research why, like what particularly made him had like negative connotations, but he was just like, yeah, I'm done. I couldn't find anything, but he was just like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah. I think there is a clumsiness that you find a lot with a lot of racially ignorant statements of this coach probably saying, oh, well, his parents are Jamaican, so let me make a joke about, you know, the West Indies beating, you know, England in cricket, and maybe he'll, you know, that'll be a way of me for me to kind of break the ice with him. And it's an assumption that a lot of people tend to make, but what he's not realizing is like, yeah, but Sol Campbell grew up, born and raised in England, so don't bring that up.
You can't make that assumption and just be like, hey, aren't you happy that this other, like, these lower countries beat our home country?
Yeah.
Sol Campbell's like, yeah, I'm gonna move the time.
Yeah, it's like, so that's not what I want to hear about.
No, it's not. And I mean, like, in this time, I'm assuming that, I mean, we have to assume that this is what, the 80s, right around the 90s. Like, if you're a black man growing up and you're trying to integrate yourself into football culture, like, you're trying to do this at a point in time where, one, you might be the only person there of color. Two, you're, I don't want to say it's like assimilation, but you're not trying to have so many things be different about you that then people can hold that against you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's like, Shinier, for, like, let's be real about it. It's like when you walk into a job for the first time, in the back of your head, even though you know you deserve the position, you're in the back of your head, you're like, all right, I don't want to do this. I don't want to step out of line so much that then they, you know, look at me differently.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there is this sense. And I think this is kind of a foreshadowing when you hear this early on in his career. Is a foreshadowing of figuring out what type of person Sol Campbell is. And one thing that this lets us know is that Sol Campbell is not, you know, he doesn't suffer fools. He's not going to take a bunch of crap. He's not going to. He's just going to be like, oh, that's how you feel about the situation? All right, I'm just going to remove myself from this situation. He's not going to blow up. He's not going to yell at anybody, but he's just going to remove himself from the situation.
And, I mean, granted, so after he left West Ham, he goes to Spurs. And it took about 2 months to get to Spurs because they really had to convince him, like, hey, look, we want you. Like, come to us. So he made a debut for Spurs, December 5th, 1992, against Chelsea. Now, the thing about that thing is he scored in that game against Chelsea. Granted, it was 88th minute. They were already down 2-1, but he scored, and he never quite got seen again that year. Granted, he was just making his debut. So after that, he joined Spurs 2 months later because, you know, he's looking for a club. But he makes his debut December 5th, 1992, against Chelsea, scores a goal in that game. But weirdly enough, he never makes another appearance Terran Venables, when asked about it, was just like, yeah, he was 17. I didn't really want to start him. Which is weird because you would think, like, this kid comes on, scores in his debut, doesn't really get seen again. But the following year, Terran Venables picks him. He plays left back that entire year. So it's weird because now he's made the switch from what, striker to left back. So he's doing the opposite of Gareth Bale appearances, which is a weird trend about Tottenham. And then he signs a new deal at the end of that season. So, like, here you are. You're a young soul, Campbell. You're a young soul. That's oddly funny. and, you know, you're starting to make ends. Not make ends, but you're starting to feel comfortable. You're starting to feel like a place of complacency. But one thing that I saw about his career, and we can touch on this later if you want to, is that he had a hard time connecting with a lot of Spurs managers.
Yeah.
You caught up on that too? Like, it was like...
Yeah, I felt like it was like a revolving door. And it just never clicked with any of them with him.
No, it didn't. Because it was like the moment something would go right, the team, it would be a team injury, the team would fall out of form. Or like, the manager wasn't doing well enough, so he would get sacked. And then another manager come in, he would bring in his own tactics. And it would just be this revolving door of stuff. And also in the prior to this, you saw players like Terrence Sheringham and others leave the club, go to Man United, win honors. Because in 98-99, Sol Campbell, he was named team captain. Yeah. If I remember right, yeah, he was named team captain. And then on top of that, like, he captains Leicester. I mean, not Leicester. He captains the team to a win over Leicester in the League's Cup. And this was a cool point because I never knew this before. But he is the first black man to ever be the winning captain for a team in Wembley. So it's kind of interesting, kind of cool. Because you think about other players like Wes Morgan. I think Rio was a captain at one time.
When England won a trophy. Rio, I mean, not Rio England, was England. Captain at one point. Yes, you have Wes Morgan with Leicester, interestingly enough. You know, his first trophy is against Leicester.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I'm trying to think if there are any other black captains in England that's won a trophy. Not just in Wembley, but just period. Because those are only two that I can think. Well, three that I can think of. Maybe I'm missing somewhere.
Who was captain of Chelsea when they won the Champions League? Not this time, but back in like 07 or something.
Also, I feel like Patrick Vieira might have captained Arsenal to a trophy.
Maybe.
So maybe four. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we can do a show on black captains and winning trophies. That seems like a lot of research.
Yeah, that seems like that's gonna take us back.
Yeah, take us back.
We're gonna end up going down a rabbit hole of
just be like, oh God, why did I commit to this? All right, so back to Sol. And this is the part that I think everyone who is anonymous that knows about Sol Campbell knows about this part, but you don't know the whole ins and outs about it. You know what I'm saying? Like transfer, his free transfer in quotation marks to Arsenal. So like, all right. I'm going to lay this out for you. You tell me how messed up this seems. And tell me, does it seem like every person at the jobs? You don't feel like you're going anywhere in the job. You feel like the job isn't putting enough money into it. They're changing the boss every couple of months. And then on top of that, your other friends are leaving the jobs and getting better benefits.
Yeah, that's something frustrating. Yeah, so, that's basically where you're at.
Yeah,
you're looking at a situation where Sol Campbell, I think it's the struggle that all young soccer players around that time felt. The sense of the first club you sign for, you want to be loyal. You want to be, especially when you start to develop a relationship with the fan base. You want to be loyal. You want to stick with it. But then you look around and you see some of your teammates leaving and going to other clubs and winning trophies here, winning trophies there, playing under world-class managers. And you look at it and you're like, and you're, I think to a certain extent, Saul Campbell is torn between staying loyal to the club that he signed with and going out to seek glory.
Okay. So I would agree with that point, but I'm going to slightly disagree with you. Because if you remember, right before, I think it's during the 1999 season. Like, so he gets in, I don't know if it was a tussle or whatnot, but remember like that story about how the Derby security person's arm was broken by Saul Campbell, supposedly?
Yeah.
And like the club told him, it was like, oh, instead of trying to fight and prove that you're innocent, just bound over, which for those who don't know, the term bound over pretty much means like you take some fault in it. You might not have done it, but you take some fault. And so it was just like, no, like if I didn't do this, I'm not going to then, you know, claim that I did, because then that puts me in a negative light, you know?
Exactly.
So, and I get that for so, because if I didn't do it, why would I admit to doing it? You know, that doesn't make sense. So on top of that, then, of top of all this that the club is doing, and then that the club supporting him because the case got dismissed, he proved his innocence, I can kind of understand where Saul wanted to go. Now, let me say this. I think how Saul grew up led to the way how Saul went about this. I think if Saul were able to talk about it to people and tell them, like, hey, look, this is what's going wrong. Like, I'm really thinking about leaving. Because remember also, like, the Bosman rule just happened in, what, 95? Yep. So Spurs already knew, like, all right, his contract's up. We're going to have to give him the cash that he wants. And we're going to make him the highest play ever in the Premier League at that time.
Yeah.
So Spurs is like, look, we'll give you the full boatload of money. But like we always say, money don't solve all your problems. I think what really needed to happen was just a sit down and just a talk of figuring out what direction do they want things to go in the club for on both sides. And I think since neither one had that conversation, I think things just kind of just bubbled out. And I think Saul already kind of made up his mind. Definitely after this incident, he kind of made up his mind. It was just like, all right, I'm leaving. But I don't think he knew where he wanted to go as of yet. And I think seeing Terry go to Man United, I mean, granted, he couldn't go to Man United because he wasn't – that defense, that team was already set. I think in his head was like, all right, let me go to Arsenal. But in his head, and I mean, granted, he knows about the Derby. He knows about what it's about.
Of course he knows about the rivalry. He's been at the club for how many years now? He knows about the rivalry, but and this is one thing that you see happens a lot with a lot of London clubs. You get these players that want to play for London, whether they be local players or foreign players. They come to London and they think to themselves, I don't want to go through the trouble of trying to find somewhere else to live. If I go and sign for a club down the street or in another neighborhood, I don't have to move. I can stay right here in my house. And instead of going to Tottenham, I go to Arsenal. Or instead of going to Chelsea, I go to West Ham. It's just one of those situations where it's a lot easier logistically for a lot of those players to just stay in the same city and not go somewhere else. But then there you got this rivalry, the North London rivalry, which is one of the biggest ones in the country.
And also, I will say this. I do not believe Arsenal in this story at all. Arsenal make it seem like, oh, we didn't know he was going to sign with us. We had no idea we were selling our team's Kel Captain. Yes, you did. Like
Arsenal knew exactly what they were. Right. Arsene Wenger knew exactly what he was doing.
Everyone was expecting that press conference to be about a goalkeeper. No one was expecting seeing Saul Campbell walk in there, sit down, sign a contract, and hold an Arsenal scarf. Arsenal, I really feel like Arsenal was making this move happen behind the scenes. Was like, and I also think this is why Saul started to, like that wedge started becoming him and Spurs, because he started seeing greener pastures. Because at this time, Arsenal is coming up. Like they're winning trophies. They have Evra, Henry, you know, these big name players. Nicholas Anelka was there. Dennis Bergkamp. And he's seeing what Spurs are doing, their supposed rivals. He's like, I'm playing with these guys, struggling for 10th or 12th in the league. And these guys are playing the Champions League. And he said, like, he wants to play Champions League, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that that I feel is something that is a continuous problem, I feel, in England with players is the irrational approach to players signing for different clubs. When you look, for example, at some of the high profile ones, you look at Carlos Tevez going from Manchester United to Manchester City. You look at some of those situations and you think to yourself, yeah, okay, they were in it for the money. They're going after the bigger bucks,
which is okay. Not a bad thing.
But in like, this situation, people
playing for money.
I mean, here's the thing. I can understand that because at the end of the day, you're getting paid a sweet amount of money if you're playing for Manchester United and starting for Manchester United on a regular basis. But in this situation, this is a situation where Tottenham does not do their due diligence to make sure that Sol Campbell's contract doesn't run out. So yeah. Is the blame on Sol Campbell, who goes to Arsenal as a free agent, which means Tottenham didn't do their homework, or is the fault Tottenham's fault for not pushing harder to make sure they can sign a new contract with this valuable and crucial player who is the captain of your team?
I think it's down the middle. I mean, because
yeah, I don't think it is, because if someone's contract runs out, that means there is something that they feel they are not getting from the club that they feel they deserve. And the club is not budging on that. Now, if the club values this player highly, you go to bat. You put forth what you feel you can, everything you feel you can to keep this player. And like you said, basically Tottenham and Sol Campbell did not have this conversation about what direction were they going in. And for me, Sol Campbell's job is to focus on what's going on the pitch. Tottenham's job is to approach him.
And yeah, Tottenham's no.
No, go ahead.
So what I was saying with his 50-50 down the middle, like, I think Sol is totally right in what he did, because he's kind of just like, all right, you know my contract's coming down. You can tell I haven't been happy because I'm getting these arguments with these managers. We're not winning. We have one league. We have a League Cup trophy. We got knocked out in the second round of the Europa League at that time. Meanwhile, our nearest rivals are winning Premier League trophies, FA Cups, got this baller team, and we're struggling at 11th. I think on Tottenham fan either. And Tottenham at this time, because one, remember, the Bosman rule is still very young. So they're still trying to figure out like the gray area of it. It's not like what it is now that we know of, where you know, like, if a player's down to 1 year, either you sign him to a media deal now or you sell him that summer. Like, there's no in between.
Exactly.
I think that time there's still that whole thing of, oh, we can hold on to him. Oh, he'll sign for the club. And then they're also banking off like he's the club captain. If he leaves us, he's going to go out of the country. He's not, because that's who the rumors were all around. It was all around Juventus, Inter.
It was like clubs, big continental clubs that were sniffing around.
So you're not thinking Tottenham in the hair. We're not thinking Arsenal, but it's Tottenham at this time has to know, like, all right, we're a smaller club. You know, we're not in the big six realm as of yet at this time period. So we're working our way up there. It's kind of like what Spurs are going through now. Like, they're trying to hold on to their big name players where their big name players don't want to be there. And they're stuck in this complex of how do we be a big club, but still also send players on their merry way when they don't want to be here. It's kind of, you know, this in between space. But getting back to Sol and his time at Arsenal, how would you describe his time at Arsenal? Because it's to me, it seems very, I don't know. It seems like it started off with like very hot and then kind of tilted on his way out, you know?
I mean, his stay at Arsenal basically depicts Arsenal around that time. When he first gets to Arsenal, this is when Arsene Wenger is building this invincible squad. And they're on the up. Arsenal is starting to storm through the league, storm through the Champions League, storm through the FA Cup, and they're starting to make a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger name for themselves as the years are going on. Until you get to 2003, and then, boom, the Invincibles. Now that they finally cracked the code and figured out exactly what they needed in order to keep, you know, clean sheets, in order to not lose games. And after that, it's like, after that high, everything is starting to peter out bit by bit, a little by little. It's basically like coming down off the hill on the other side of the peak. So Sol Campbell basically is riding that train, that Arsenal train. He's at his peak, and then once it starts to go downhill, so does he. I think most of the players on that invincible team, that's what happened, unless they went off and played somewhere else. Like, for example, Thierry Henry goes to Barcelona, and he still does very well at Barcelona. And but it's one of those situations where you have everyone reached that high, and now everyone's kind of tailing off.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, about it, like you say, he was part of that invincible season there at Arsenal. I find it hilarious. He's part of, they call it the Battle of the Buffet, or they call it Pizzagate, where pretty much Arsenal 49 match streak ended. And to this day, like, I've watched interviews on Sol Campbell, I'm researching this, like, you can tell this man is still pissed at Wayne Rooney because he really thinks that Rooney takes a dive. Like, there was even one clip where he, like, got on, like, this jumble board and was like, look, he's falling forward. I could not have fouled him. And he is, like, defending this point, like, as is his life, like, depending on it. It's just funny.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you can understand why, though. A lot of people would say, okay, it's a player dive. Players dive all the time. And you were the one that suffered the consequence of them diving and whatnot. But you need to think about it this way. This was the game where Arsenal hadn't lost in over a year.
Yeah.
Like, you forget what it feels like to lose in that much time. As a player, you forget what it feels like to lose a league game. And then this happens, and you've got this dive, and that it sticks in your mind. It sticks in your head a lot more. And I think Sol Campbell, it affected him a lot, because it's one thing for a striker to go through that streak and to be like, oh, we finally lost the game. Like, we lost the game eventually. But they're thinking, oh, well, I'm still scoring goals. But as a center back, I think it hits harder, because you're the one that gave up the goals that led to you losing. You know what I mean? As a center back, it hurts more, that transition. That's 49 games, you know? 49 games of not losing. You almost hit the 50-game mark. And for this to be one of the reasons why, it I think Sol Campbell, I don't think he'll ever let it go. He's taking that one to the grave.
Probably so. But I mean, like, even in this, like, don't get it twisted. He's still catching flack from Spurs fans. Like, there's one instance of, I think, in 2009? Mm-hmm. I think 2009 was the year, right? Where three fans got banned for pretty much, like, racially abusing Sol Campbell because of his move to Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, first of all, one, you are taking this derby way too serious to racial abuse someone over a move for money. Like, it's not that deep. Relax. Secondly, like, the amount of time you have to go into making a chant that not only has the holy trifecta of racism, homophobia, and prejudice is too much time you are spending getting wild up for this derby. It's not that deep. Like, it's not that deep. And so, oh, did you also hear the story about his brother the first time he returned to Spurs?
I don't think I had gotten across that one. I had come across that story.
So his first time returning to Arsenal, returning to Spurs in an Arsenal jersey, he's playing well in the game. Game is 1-1. But around halftime, I think he realizes his brother is in the stands with the Spurs supporters hurling insults at Sol. And imagine that. Like, you just made this move to, like, not only put more financial stability into your family, but it's like, my whole family should be on board with this. Just to look up in the stands and to see your brother
in just the stands yelling at you.
Like, how does that mess you up even more as a person? Just be like, yep, I'm pretty glad I made this move. Pretty glad. Like, I'm just saying, it's just crazy.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, that's one thing, but I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that there are a lot of fans that separate life from football. You know what I mean? Once they step into the stadium, it's a different ball game. You know, like, if, let's say, for example,
I mean, best example is Kobe with the whole trials and never.
You know, exactly. Something like that. Or even if you were to take something even more personal than that, you were to take, for example, let's say Real Madrid are playing against BVB Dortmund. Do you think Thurgen Hazard is going to hold back because he's playing against his brother? No, once we step on this pitch, it's war.
First of all, you're the first ever person I've heard say BVB Dortmund. Huh? Sir, you are the first ever person I heard say the full name out. Like, no way.
you gotta make sure people understand what I'm talking about. But after the game, all right, let's go. Look, I ain't seen you in a while. You're here in Dortmund. Let me take you out to the cool spot. How's mom? You know, all of that. But once you cross that white line and step onto that pitch and the ref blow that whistle, it's war. It's not the same thing. So I think there are a lot of fans that look at it that way. And I think around that time, you did have a lot of players that understood that it was that way. That if, for example, you grew up, let's say I grow up in Boston. I grow up in Boston playing baseball. And one day I signed for the Yankees. Let's say I have a cousin who grew up with me and we grew up like brothers, but I show up to Fenway Park with a Yankees jersey, go onto the pitch. I'm going to see my cousin cussing me out in the stands because that rivalry between Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees is that deep. That now, granted, after the game, we're going to go hit up the pub together, whatever. It's over. We're done. I haven't seen you in ages. Let's go home. Let's go say hi to Ma. Yeah. But it's when it's in that situation, you're so hardwired to have this animosity towards this other team that it's really hard to pull that back. Even if, you know, and a lot of times, a lot of the things that these fans are saying, they don't really mean it. They're just, I'm just trying to do what it takes for me to throw this player off, you know, to get this player to mess up their game, to mess with them mentally. It's the reason why the fans are called the 12th man. But I know that's something that can be very, very weird to see. And you'd be looking up like, yo, we grew up, you're my brother.
Like, right. So I think the rest of Sol career kind of is like, it's kind of weird. I want to compare it to almost Karl Malone in a sense, because it kind of just, not Carl. Who could I relate this to? It's more so like Shaq. Like you could tell, like it's that weird space of like I'm still trying to be competitive, but I want to make like a ton of money.
Yeah.
Like it's that weird space. Because like there's a lot of times he could have just took the move to like Celtic or, you know, somewhere else. You know, still play competitive, but not making as much money. But he goes to Portsmouth, 2006. After, mind you, he just scored the goal in Champions League, but Arsenal was already decided. They were kind of already redoing this rebuild kind of thing, sort of, where they were kind of moving players out. Yeah. And also, up to that point, too, he was missing a lot of time with injuries and stuff like that. So he kind of saw the writing on the wall. He was like, all right, let me go to this new vision. Goes to Portsmouth. Gets named club captain in 2018 by Harry Redknapp. That's also when they won FA Cup, so he's there for that time period. Although he stayed for the 08-09 season when the team got hit with, what was it called? Not liquidation. Was it bankruptcy?
Well, Portsmouth, yes. I believe they... I think that
I can't remember the exact term for it. But I can't administration. Remember, but
it's some form of you know, financial catastrophe, basically.
Yeah, it's administration. That's what it is. He got hit with, yeah, Portsmouth got hit with administration. But this is one thing that I have learned so far. You don't mess with Sol. Sol still ended up suing the Cole for $1.7 million. He was like, oh, no, I'm not getting paid. Of course they're not. So, like, they don't have anybody to pay you. But, I mean, he stayed, although it kept, helped the team stay up that 08-09 year. And then this Knox County thing. And I'm going to let this just sit for a while. This was very odd to me because you can tell, like, at this point, Sol is just really trying to do this for money. Like, that's all it is. And he goes to Knox for, I think, so that's a 5-year deal. Mind you, the team is in League Two. I think they haven't been up to the Prem in a very, very long time.
Oh, yeah.
And they had these dubious billionaire owners. Also, weirdly enough, guess who the coach was of this team?
Sven.
Yep. Sven Erik Gorgson, who was also the England coach at the time where Sol Campbell made his move to Arsenal because Sven told him, you might want to move to Arsenal if you want to get in this England team. Because also around this time, guess who else was coming up? Rio Ferdinand and John Terry.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's another reason why he probably made a move. But back to this Knox County thing, you know who was the goalkeeper there?
Around the time where Sol Campbell was there? No. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you one hint. He plays for Leicester now.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Schmeichel. Yeah, Schmeichel was the goalkeeper there. Schmeichel was making like a boatload of money. Yeah, it's weird. And for those who have never really looked into it, look into the Knox County scandal. It is weird. It gets weirder the more you read into it. It's just weird.
Yeah, it's y'all. You're entering the financial twilight zone when you go into the Knox County scandal.
It's weird. Shouldn't ever work. But he doesn't stay there for long. He only stayed there, I think, for like 3 days. Because then he realized, like, oh, I've been lying. He tries to make it seem like, oh, I was lied to under pretenses. And, you know, it's below my character. Like, sir, you signed a 5-year deal with a League Two team. What you think was going on? Like, come on now. So, come on now, dog. Like, but he goes back. He trains with Arsenal for a little bit. Actually, plays in an Arsenal team down the stretch. Then makes one final move to Newcastle. And then he kind of just retires. And even in this, is like, when you look at Sol and also like his international career, because he made his debut in 96. It always felt as if, like, because Sol was these captains at these big-name clubs. The captain at Spurs, captain at Arsenal, captain at Portsmouth, not England. Like, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was the second youngest player ever to be named captain in England at that time. But it's like, it's just crazy to think about how Sol is as a person, but when you think about how Sol is as a person, it describes so much of his career.
I don't know. I feel Sol Campbell, a lot of times, I think, focused too much on the football, focused too much on the soccer, and didn't look at the bigger picture in a lot of situations. I think the Knox County situation shows you that. The Portsmouth situation shows you that. His move to Arsenal shows you that. At the end of the day, I think him focusing solely on the football and focusing on where can I go for my career to be better? Where can I go for me to play better football? Where can I go for me to earn a better living playing football? That's how it needs to happen. Regardless of whether people can call, will call you a mercenary or not, but at the end of the day, this is your livelihood. At the end of the day, I'm going to go and apply for a job at a company that is doing well, that is going to be able to pay me, that is going to allow me to move up. So footballers are looking at it the same way. Soccer players are looking at it the same way. Where can I go for my career to improve? There is also, yes, you have the bonus of, you know, the fan base and your devotion to the fan base, but that'll never, ever, ever be the be-all, end-all for any player.
So, I mean, just a couple of quick facts for you about Sol Campbell. I was trying to say that, but I couldn't figure out how to say it. Played in 6 straight international tournaments, could have played in the 7th if he got chosen to the 2010 World Cup. He also became the second player after Ryan Giggs to play in the first 19 years of the Premier League. So it's pretty cool to see. I mean, even though he ended his career at Knox County and whatnot. I think the best way I had to sum it up about Sol is he's a character that's misunderstood. But he's misunderstood because he just doesn't take the time to explain it. It's kind of just like, if you don't know it, you're not going to know it. And it is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So, any last things for you, my man, before we wrap up this episode on the Great Sol Campbell?
I wanted to talk a little bit about the type of center back Sol Campbell was on the pitch. When you look at center backs like Virgil van Dijk, Rio Ferdinand, even John Terry, you see a lot of Sol Campbell in those players. This, in a way, in terms of the way he played center back, one player who's close to our heart that he reminds me of is William Yambi. This kind of enforcer in the back. Sol Campbell was a very physical. Of course, if you look at Sol Campbell in terms of his size, he was a pretty big dude, 6'2". You know, pretty solid, and could move. Like, even though he was big and solid, he could move. He had pace. He had pace that you wouldn't normally find in most center backs around that time, but the physicality of his game was top notch. Was as a striker, when you went up against, especially in his days at Arsenal, when you went up against Sol Campbell, you'd take that deep breath before the game, like, all right, here we go, because you knew it was going to be a slugfest. It was going to be a battle for you as a striker going up against Sol Campbell. And it was very interesting. One of the memories I have of him was in the 98 World Cup. More importantly, the classic game of that World Cup, the 2-2 draw with Argentina. Sol Campbell, actually, that game, I would say that England was a little bit robbed, because Sol Campbell was probably England's, with the exception of Alan Shearer, was probably England's best player in that game. He the authority he held in the back was phenomenal. He actually scored a goal that was disallowed that would have had England winning the game 3-2. But game goal was disallowed for reasons.
You have Hawkeye back there, sir. You have Hawkeye back there. But I mean,
you said
man,
what?
Yeah, if Hawkeye technology back in, that's how it was. You
know? Yeah, if they had VAR back then, it would have been 3-2, and England would have been going to the semis rather than Argentina. Yeah. But it's one of those situations, you know, that Sol Campbell was a juggernaut in the back, and I would hope that he would always be remembered as such, because what a center back he was. He was a phenomenal center back. And I think one of the center backs that even if slightly revolutionized the position in terms of what he brought to it and the mobility he brought to playing as a center back, which, like I said before, leads to the style of center back that players like Rio Ferdinand, John Terry, Virgil van Dijk are today and after him.
Yeah. So I think that's a great point to end on, because I got nothing else to add. So as always, guys, this is another chapter of Can I Kick It that we're happy to bring to you guys. As always, take the time to follow us on Twitter at CIKIFC. We appreciate it. We thank everyone that's been rocking with us since season one. We're back now for season three. If you haven't, if you're a new listener, take the time. Go through, listen to the episodes, enjoy them. If you want to talk to us about us, feel free to hit us up. Let us know your thoughts. If you got any suggestions for any cool, unique stories in the diaspora that you want to hear us tell, hit us up and let us know as well. But, Shanir, anything else from you, my man?
No, I'm all done.
I want you to know I was nervous to answer that question because I didn't know if you had another story to tell. No. So this is Elliot. This is Shanir, guys. We will holler at you guys later.